Blog Talk Radio.
You have joined us for tonight's show. I need to first remind you that the opinions expressed on this show may or may not be endorsed by Trans Women National, TWN Radio, Prism Radio, or myself. Each individual owns their opinion on this show. Most Prism Radio shows are suitable for all ages, but it is recommended that listeners should be at least 16 years old. If you're listening live, you can call in at 914-205-5655. That number is at the top of the screen. But please be patient as it may take a few moments to get you connected. If you want to join our live Facebook chat, please go to facebook.com/PrismRadio. My name is Holly Knight, and I will be your host for Prism Radio. So let's get the show started. Hello, everyone. This is Holly, and I just was listening to that. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on, and I was just listening to that intro. I'm thinking, my gosh, is that going to put you to sleep or what? It was pretty boring, so I'm going to have to do something to jive that up a little bit, to spruce it up a little bit or whatever. So it's going to be the first year. I think I'm going to get some new music and some new stuff going on. And welcome to Prism Radio. This is actually my 100th radio show. Started back in 2010, and it's a pretty special day and pretty special moment. And I've got a pretty special person to be on here. We have Tess Graham. Hey, Tess.
Well, good evening. Holly, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. I've never done a call-in radio show before.
Well, it's always fun. Everybody that I've done have had on a show that it was, especially their first time, they always have a good time. So that's the plan. So if you can, at least in my, from my perspective, your volume is a little low. I don't know if you're if you can talk directly. I don't know what kind of phone you're using or whatever. So it's just a tad low, if, just to let you know.
Is this any better?
Oh, much better. Much better. Great. Thank you. So we have Tess Graham, and we're going to get to know her. This is the show is about her and some things that she has been involved in and kind of things that she's done back from the day when she was playing on the band back in she played tenor sax in a concert band back in high school. That was a few years ago. And
the horn was almost bigger than me.
Yeah, Tess is not not the largest person. She's kind of small in stature, but and huge heart, huge in personality for sure. So lots of stuff we want to cover a little bit. So the purpose of this show, it really, as I said, is to get to know her a little bit and kind of go from there. I want to let you know that the ways that you can connect if you want to talk to Tess or ask questions or whatever. And the first way is you can call in live. That is 914-205-5655. Now, if you're listening, which if you're listening live, that number should be at the top of your screen. So so you can call in. I'll be watching the screen. One of the things to make a note, if you are calling in, to give us a little bit of time. I've got a bunch of screens up and I'm trying to watch this and the Facebook page and my notes and all that kind of stuff. So just kind of hang out a little bit and we'll get to you as quickly as possible. Got questions for Tess? That's great. Got questions for me? That's great. If you just have general trans-related questions, this is a time to ask because we got a couple of years of experience between the both of us. So if we can't answer it, it can't get answered. So anyway, again, now, Tess, we're going to kind of start at the beginning, if you don't mind. And
okay.
You were I guess you grew up when you were a little tranny. I'm sorry. When you were a little one, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up on a dairy farm in Kane, Pennsylvania.
And where? What part of Pennsylvania?
Kane. It's up. It's in between Erie and Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
It's up in,
yeah.
In the serious hills up there.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a working dairy farm?
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
And my father worked on the farm, and he also delivered milk.
Yeah, cool.
And he used to make ice cream, and I remember them doing that because we get to taste it, and I thought that was seriously cool.
Yeah.
And we had two big memories was there was this fire station, a ranger fire station on the highest hill on the farm. And what it was is it was this tall structure that, you know, you could look out over the countryside to see if there were any fires there. And we were never allowed to go in there, but we always did. But in order to get there, we had to cross this pasture with the bulls. And so there, and there were four of us. There was my three sisters and myself. And I was like three, and so my little sister was like two. So we're not big people getting across
right.
this dangerous. So,
yeah.
And, so anyhow, we go scooting across there, and if we weren't really careful, if the bull was coming, then you really just ran as like a crazy person and hoped you didn't step in a cake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, because yeah. If you stepped in a cake, you ended up sitting in the cake. And if you sat in that pile of crap, then we were in real trouble because then my mom would know that we were in the bullpen.
Wow.
We were getting in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. So you got through it fine. You didn't get attacked or anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Funny.
So you got you lived in on the dairy farm in Kane, Pennsylvania, and then you moved to Madison, Ohio when you were still in preschool. Now, what part of Ohio is Madison?
Madison is right up on the lake. It's 35 miles east of Cleveland.
Okay.
It's in between, about halfway between Erie, Pennsylvania and Cleveland, Ohio. And it was literally right on the lake. So we lived like a block away from Lake Erie.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's where we really grew up. And I lived there, I graduated from college in 68, or high school in 68, college in 72, until 1979.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh,
so clearly it's northern Ohio, obviously, so the weather was probably a bit cold up there, I'm guessing.
Well, it was always cold. Here's the thing about northern Ohio. They say, well, you get the four seasons, and you do. But they usually come like in a week. You get like 50 weeks of winter, and then you get like 1 week of spring and 1 week of fall. That's 52 weeks.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and summer kind of squeezes in between there, and the rest of the time it's just cold.
Yeah.
And it was, and it was just cold and snowy and incredible. We used to go play hockey out on the lake when it froze.
That
was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. So you kind of get used to that, I guess, though.
Well, you grew up in that, and that's your world because you don't know any different. And we didn't. And we didn't know that there was actually a better weather year-round until my parents started taking us on vacations. And, and then we would go... Yeah, it'd be like November in Ohio, so it'd be like 6 feet of snow and like minus 20. And then we go down to Florida.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, This is such a place. Like, just look at this place. There's
wow.
No snow.
Yeah.
People wearing flip flops, for God's sake. Look at this place.
In November.
Yeah. Yes, in November. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you probably hated your parents at that point.
Yeah. Once you found out that, that the whole world wasn't hell. You know, there was actually paradise outside this, Northern Ohio place. Yeah, then we were all anxious to go flee. And curiously enough, of the four of us, my three sisters, I am the only one that left that place.
Wow. So I'm guessing that you're the only sane one of the bunch, it seems.
I am. Yeah.
Did your sisters? Yeah. Did they marry?
They did. They did. Uh-huh. My youngest sister married twice. My Irish twin. She's 363 days older than I am. Her birthday's on the 12th and mine is on the 10th. So we celebrate December 11th as our twin day, because that's the one day in the year like they're the same age. So she married, and she's still married. And my oldest sister never married. She never married.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, kind of switch gears and stuff. Were you struggling at that time as a in your days on the dairy farm or your early days in Madison, Ohio with your gender identity?
I did. I was 4 years old when I found out that I wasn't a girl, because I thought I was a girl. I did.
What's that thing down there?
I just thought they all had that. I thought girls had that stuff I had that stuff, and I was a girl, so they all had that. I said,
that's
what girls have. That's what we have.
Yeah.
And we were going down to the beach, and I was changing into my bathing suit with my little sister. And we're both naked, and I go to put on my bathing suit, and I look at her. She doesn't have that. She's got no junk. Where's your thing? She says, I don't have anything. I'm a girl. I said, well, I'm a girl too. She says, no, you're a boy. That was a revelation. I didn't know.
Oh my!
My whole world went upside down.
Yeah. Exactly. Wow. That's amazing.
That's right. So,
Yeah. So then you had to deal with all that. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And my mom was, she was better about me dressing up in my sister's clothes and when I was younger.
Yeah.
My dad, no, not so much. Not
right.
at all. He was, he was my son and definitely saw to it that I manned up eventually.
Right. Did everything he could.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
He was pretty good at it.
Right, exactly. So I know that your dad is no longer with us. Is your mom still alive?
No. She actually passed 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're both gone.
Your mom passed away 10 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah, my mom passed away 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. 10 years
Bad
ago.
Year.
Yeah. 10 years ago, December 25th.
No way.
Yeah.
Holly. No way.
Yeah. Yeah. Christmas morning, we found out she passed away. It was, this is about you, but I'll throw this story out. It's kind of interesting, but my mom worked at drugstores in retail. She was in retail for her whole, professional life, basically. And if you work in a drugstore your whole life, you listen to really a lot of Christmas music because they start playing it even back in those days. They start playing it, like the day after Thanksgiving. And she'd
right.
come home, and I'd want to listen to Christmas music. And she goes, I don't want to hear that shit. And she'd just go like this. Just turn out all, you know.
Oh,
it,
no.
And she, now, she loved Christmas as far as the family and stuff, but she got so fried about Christmas that it was just, she just didn't like it. And so my brother and I went to see her Christmas Eve, and she was in a nursing home, and she had cancer, and she was doing pretty good. We were actually thinking about taking her home the next day. And then my mm-hmm. brother gives me a call Christmas morning, said she passed away during the night. And so we talked about it. I said, she just was not about to put up with another Christmas. She didn't want to put up with another one. So she figured this is the best day for her to go. So, but.
So, well, I'm sorry about that, Holly. That had to be really hard.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard, but I miss her a lot. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but now she lived pretty close to where I currently live, and with the town up the road and stuff. And there would be times I would drive by at night going home when I was living over closer and stuff, and I would start to swing by to go see her, and I forgot she was gone. It was, you know, it just really kind of crazy and stuff. So now, did your mom, did she have cancer? What happened with her?
No, she had arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah.
And she had it really, really bad. It started at a young age, mm-hmm. and she started taking aspirin back in, of course, I was in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually she had to take more and more aspirin. The aspirin, you know, just crushed her stomach. So she had to take medicine so she ended up, you know, by the time she was in her 60s, she was taking, you know, 20 or 30 different meds. And,
oh, my gosh.
So she had, she had arrhythmia with her heart. So they did a bypass. And, and she was fine. And then she was actually supposed to come home that day. My dad and my sister were there. My older sister were there, and they were just waiting for the doctor to discharge my mom. And my dad was, you know, sitting there talking to my mom, and she just sat up, bolt up straight, held her hand out and said, no.
Wow.
My dad was like, what? You know, no what? And then she said, no again. But she wasn't looking at him. She was looking past him. And,
oh, gosh.
She said, no one more time. And then she laid down. She crossed her arms and she was gone, just like that.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So she was saying no to something.
So, yeah. Well, my dad was thinking that it was, you know, whoever it was that was there to, you know, take her home, came, and she wasn't ready to go.
She wasn't ready to go.
No.
No,
she was,
I'm not
adamant
going.
About it. No.
Yeah.
No. And but apparently there's no arguing that point.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah. Wow.
So the sad part about that is my dad never forgave God for not letting him die that same day.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
He blamed God for that. So he lived another 10 years, and they were the saddest years of his life. It was just lost.
That's sad.
Not my mom.
Yeah, yeah. It's now. Were you raised Catholic?
Yes, very Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom wanted me to be a priest, and I was an altar boy, and not the altar boys that, you know, make the news. You know, I never had that problem.
Yeah, thankfully. Yeah.
Thankfully, but you know, in retrospect, you know, I do know. And this is just a segue into that really quick. We had, there was a grown man there, and he was the trainer for the altar boys. And he always assisted the priest and this and that. And he'd gone to the monastery. For some reason, he got the boot.
Hmm.
And, he never married, and his name was Frank. And one of my best friends, Jim, he was also an altar boy. Well, Jim was seriously gay, and I never really knew that. I guess I did, but it was, I never really, I guess it was never that important to me.
Yeah, it was never thought about it, yeah.
Yeah, he was, he was the drum major, and I said, oh, yeah, that's Jim. and it was really cool. And, looking back on some of this now, I remember Jimmy used to spend more time with Frank, and Frank could, So, you get a little older and you think,
Wow, so you don't know if for a fact anything happened, but it
no.
could have.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Back then, who knew?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't think about it. And, even now you probably, I'm assuming you get to know the priest and you trust them and nobody says, no, not him. He's not capable of anything like that. And because they're still, it's pretty mad. And again, not that it requires to understand, but it is such a bizarre clearly these people are people of God and they go into ministry. I'm assuming they didn't do that on go into ministry with that in mind. It's just bizarre that stuff happens.
Who was I was talking to that, and this is a few years ago that I had a conversation with somebody who was in the priesthood. They quit, and he ended up marrying some woman and this and that. But, he told me that, that they were actually recruiting these guys, and they would actually have sex parties right there at the monastery.
Oh, my gosh.
The seminary, yes. And it was full-blown, and it got to the point where, the straight guys were really, left out, really uncomfortable and looked down upon, says you really need to be, getting the gay way. And,
Wow. That's kind of crazy. Yeah.
It is crazy. And I don't know how much of that is true or not, but, you kind of look at, how did that get started and how did it ever just get a life of its own?
I know.
It was so ingrained that, that they were, that it was just, they didn't think anything about it.
Yeah.
That's
so, it is. So during your childhood growing up and stuff, what is, because I know that you're older than 50, let's say. So what was it that helped you get through that? Because we all know that it's not easy. We fight it. Of course, when you were a child, much like when I was a child, we didn't know. You probably felt like it was you were the only one and wasn't anybody else around, and you had
Absolutely.
To fight it. You had to beat it. But what was it that helped you get through all of that?
As bizarre as it sounds, it was the thought in my mind, myself, that I could fix me.
Yeah.
If I just gave this myself enough time, I could figure this out and I could fix me.
Mm-hmm.
I could make myself like a normal person.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that sustained me, because everything else, it was just, when that pink fog comes over you, it's just, You're lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're lost.
Yeah.
I mean, everything you can see is pink, baby.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, this is everybody, you know, who's gone down this road, you know, there's such guilt, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you,
yeah.
When you go down that road, and remorse and anger and
mm-hmm. self-loathing.
I never really liked
yeah.
me. I never really
yeah,
liked
that's
me.
Right. Exactly.
I never did.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It wasn't until actually I transitioned that I was able to actually look at myself and say, well, you know, I don't look as pretty as I thought I was going to look, but, you know, I like me. I'm
yeah.
happy with me. I like
right.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been able to say that in my whole life. Never.
Well, I, you know, on that topic, and it's a really good point, and I would like for you to talk a little bit more about it. But on that topic is, you said something like pretty as I would like to be. Of course, none of us are. And
right.
but one of the things that you hear a lot is like, well, I didn't transition because this, or this. And sometimes because I don't pass very good or whatever, which is, in my opinion, kind of baloney. But I get it. I do get it. But I think what I have figured out, not what I figured out by myself, but and I tell you, it was you know who Tricia is. Tricia has helped me with some things, and it's really amazing. You get to this point in your life, and you transition, and you feel like you kind of feel good. And I'm at the same feeling that you're talking about. And you and I both know so many that are at that point. And you start thinking about, well, it's clearly we want to be better looking. We want to be more of this and less of this and more of this here and less of that there and stuff. And you wonder how in the world is it possible? And the bottom line is we finally become authentic. We no longer have to lie.
That is the gospel truth.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Rita Friday. I told you we had lunch.
Oh, that's
and,
right, yeah.
And she was asking me about, you know, my early transitioning and this and that,
mm-hmm.
thinking that, you know, it was kind of like hers, you know, she's, her story seems to be, you know, a pretty smooth sailing. You know, just kind of moving right along.
Right.
And I told her my story is about as ugly as it got. I thought, holy crap. I said, what do you mean you've never been asked to leave a restaurant? You've never been thrown out of a bar? You've never been told, no, you cannot have a room at this hotel?
Wow.
I said, did
wow.
that never happen to you? She said, no, no. You were never thrown out of a church? No. I said, oh.
Wow.
It was not smooth sailing. It was not. But you know what? When I got to the point, and it wasn't right away, but it was at some point, even before I had my surgery, is that I was able to look myself in the mirror, and I liked that person.
Mm-hmm.
Like we just said, you know, oh God, I need a facelift. I need new nose.
Oh yeah.
I need, you know, all this crap. But it,
all
I,
the
know,
above. Yeah.
It was, but I liked the person looking back at me, and I think
mm-hmm.
that's what saved me. I think that being able to look at me and like me for the first time in my life, I was able to say, I like me.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah.
That has been such a little thing. You say, well. Could you not like yourself? Well, yeah, you talk to Holly Knight, yeah. Hey, talk to Rachel, talk to any of us out there, and it becomes, you know, pretty self-evident. You know, this is not a community that is filled with self-love.
That is true. Yeah, yeah.
Self-love thing.
Yeah.
But I was, but that saved me. That saved me.
Yeah.
And I agree. With what you said, I hadn't thought about that statement that we are authentic.
Mm-hmm.
But that is absolutely true. That is very well put. I like that. Yeah. True.
Right. And one of my personal missions or my personal mission statement, I guess, or goals in life or something is, and you've heard me talk about this often, is to try to, and I got to come up with a really good way of stating the mission because, you know, that's what mission statements are, right? Really good statements. But basically, it's the opposite of preaching to the choir, is that we continue to preach to the choir so much, but we have to find some bridge between what we go through, what other people go through. So, for example, my brother, I'll use him as an example. Amazing. I love him to death. But he probably would take ownership, complete ownership, that he's a redneck, I would say, or at least fits into the definition of a redneck, not in a bad way, but he's a country guy that, that likes to shoot guns and likes to, you know, ride his Harley and all this kind of stuff. And I remember him growing up, and he always had a hard time conforming to society and the wearing the tie and looking good and being the, you know, that kind of stuff. And he kind of got out and made his own path. And he's for the most part has been pretty self authentic, but authentic to himself. And really, because he presents how he wants to present. He's a Harley guy with long, most of his life he's had long hair. Most of his life he had facial hair. He basically kind of, you know, presented however he wanted to present in a masculine way, but still presented in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And was authentic in doing that. That's who he was. It fit who he was. And I say this a lot. If you look around and you see all of these people, the Harley bikers, the preppy guys, you know, the cheerleading girls, all that kind of stuff, is when we can really be authentic to ourselves, no matter who it is really, really life changing.
I agree. And I bet your brother was able to say he liked him. He liked who he was.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would say he probably said he loves who he is.
That's even better. That's even better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those are lucky people. And
right.
I think, you know, you and I are lucky that, you know, we were able to get to this point in our lives that we can say that because of a large number of girls, guys who just never got to this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never will.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot that, you know, the suicide, what is it? 41% of our community attempts suicide. I don't know exactly the number that is, I don't want to use the word successful, but that attempt suicide and actually commit suicide because they just can't get to that point where they're authentic. And it's just really, really sad.
It is sad. It is sad.
Yeah.
We don't have to, and you don't have to dig deep to find a story just about that. You know, I can't do this. You know, I can't take. And the only option open for me is I have to end this pain. I have to end it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And you get it. I mean, I think if you get it,
absolutely.
I get that. We both get that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I've been there. We understand.
Yeah.
It's just. I had a conversation this week with someone from they weren't trans, but they were talking about trans people and this and that, and if it bothered them about the life not lived, the other life,
mm-hmm.
and the regret about having not lived that first life, you know,
mm-hmm.
all the what ifs and possibilities and this and that, and. I said, well, yes. I said, but I will tell you this about that. I said, some of the members of the community, they can do that, and it's okay for them to go down that road. And I said, I'm just not one of those people. I said,
right.
When I start going down that particular road there, I said, I ended up down a rabbit hole. I said, mm-hmm. It is just nothing but the black despair, utter despair. And I said,
mm-hmm.
That is beyond depression. That is beyond hopelessness. I said, utter despair. Utter. I said, and
yeah.
Nothing good has ever happened to me down there. I said, that's that's where all the bad things, that's where
right.
bad things happen. And,
right.
And those are the moments that you shake your head and say, well, you know, well, I literally dodged a bullet that time. You know, I really
mm-hmm.
did. And so I've learned that there are some places, some things about my life that I can reminisce about. And over the years, I've been able to, you know, the hurt and the pain has softened.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's become just a memory, some
mm-hmm.
good memories.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some places that I just don't think I will ever be able to go. I just,
yeah.
No, don't go there. And yeah, don't go there.
Exactly.
Yeah. People ask me about it. I say, yeah, there's. Yeah, I do know about that. And I said,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a good thing for me to talk about.
No, and I agree. It's just a difficult. It's a topic that is difficult anyway to even get to. So with that, I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I got a little
okay.
bit of a call-in commercial that I want people to call in and talk to the Tesserita, and I'm going to tell you if you can. Call in or send me a message on the chat and explain the nickname Tesserita, you get free admission to the next radio show. Free admission to this radio show next if you can explain what Tesserita means. But so the Tesserita is here. We have Tess Graham, and we're going to take a little bit of a break. But Tess, I do this on all my guests. So after the break, we're going to come back. If you can have dinner with any two people, living or dead,
wow.
any two people, living or dead, and what I want to know is who would you have dinner with and why would you pick those two people?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So the commercial is a minute and 50 seconds long. So it's a little kind of got some music to it. So you got a little bit of time to think about it. If you're not ready, then we'll talk about something until you're ready. So if it's one person,
okay.
that's fine. So we'll be back here in about a minute, just a little less than 2 minutes. And just letting you know, people can hear you still talking just because it's on a commercial. So you might don't want to be singing out loud.
Okay.
All right. Okay. We'll be back.
Okay.
Hey there, did you know you could call in live to ask questions or even make comments at 914-205-5655? When you call, please be patient and we'll get to you as soon as we can. You will be able to listen to the show live as you wait. The number is 914-205-5655. The number is also on the Blog Talk Radio page where you are currently listening live. You can also participate in a live chat on our Trans Women National Facebook page. The link is available on the Blog Talk Radio page or our website. Thank you, and back to the show. Okay, we are back, and this is Prism Radio, and it is our 100th show on Prism Radio, so really, really happy to be here. We have Tess Graham, otherwise known as the Tesserita. So we had 45 people call in guessing what it was, and nobody got it right. I cannot believe it. 45 people in that 1 minute called and was giving me answers, and they were, you know, there's things that they were guessing, Tess, that I can't repeat. That even on this adult site, we can use profanity, we can talk about all kinds of stuff, but things that they were guessing, I just can't repeat. So Tesserita. So Tesserita, I just gotta let you know that one night, I know it was Tess and I, but I think there was a couple of us there, but maybe all of the group, the four of us, which would probably be Tess and then Rachel and Julie and I, and we were at Chill, our favorite bar. I'm gonna give a plug for Chill. Chill is a bar on Bardstown Road, and just going to throw this out and stuff. It's a cute bar, really, really nice bar. If you're from Louisville, across the street from Ditto's restaurant next to that Subway. So I just plug three companies. Should be getting lots of money for this. But Chill, you know, in the city of Louisville, just kind of, again, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff here. But the city of Louisville is really interesting, is that there are some bars that are very, very, the demographics would be, let's say, gay. And I would say probably Triangles is a predominantly a male gay bar. But Chill is owned by two amazing guys that I know of, maybe more than two, but the two that we know are really good guys.
They are very good guys.
Yeah, they're partners. And so it's owned by gay people, but it would be probably perceived as a gay bar, but it's a very alternative bar. There's LGBT straight people there. There's all kinds of demographics there. So it's really cool. It's got a little patio there. And when it's warm, it's an amazing little cute little bar on Bardstown Road and stuff. And it's kind of good to watch people there too. But the bartenders are amazing. They're cute. They're funny. They got great personalities. They make pretty much whatever you make. I just highly recommend the place. And we hang out there as Trans Women National every Wednesday night. We try to get there about 6, but people kind of come and go between 6 and 10. So if you want to come out and hang out with some really cool people, it's lots and lots of fun. And we kind of talk about everything under the sun. And most of the time we start telling stories and none of them are true. But they're all fun and stuff. And so
they're all good though.
Yeah, they're all really good. And you know, if you hang
they're
around
really
long
good.
Enough, if you hang around long enough, you get to hear them more than once.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
That's where you get the happier ending.
I know, exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, I think most of the time we've been, you and I for sure, but the four of us have been hanging out so many hours in the last, we have our meetings, our planning meetings, our times out, going to events. We travel to other places. And I'm not sure if I've heard anybody tell a story twice. I bet I have, because I tell stories all the time. But most people don't. I think we continue to tell new stories that we learn about each other all the time. So
good story.
We got, yeah, true story. So
and the later in the evening, the better the stories.
For sure. And they have a tendency to they go from G-rated to PG to R.
They get really crazy.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we don't have a bleacher section out there.
Exactly. People listening and eating popcorn and paying admission to hear the story. Yeah. Yeah,
we have a $3 drink just to listen.
We actually need to probably have a radio show with speakers just to listen some night. But you know what I need to do is take a little speaker and hook it up and not tell anybody else. Just you and I know that it's on, and we kind of encourage people to tell stories. That would be pretty funny.
That would be so cool. Yeah. That would be super cool.
Yeah. So one night we were at Chill, and we're trying to decide we want a drink, and Tess is wanting something with rum, and I think I got me a margarita, so that's a hint.
Yes, you did.
And so then she comes up with this idea of making a rum-based margarita, not a tequila-based margarita. And it is actually pretty good, and we called it the Tesserita. So that was the beginning of that. So anyway, so that takes care of it. So now the thing is, next time I'm going to give the trivia question of the night to offer free tickets to Prism Radio, then it may be that question again. So only people that listen to this show have a chance to actually win that contest.
They would know that secret recipe.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got two.
The must.
Yeah, exactly. So you got two guests, living or dead, that you're going to have dinner with. Who would they be?
Amelia Earhart and Winston Churchill.
Wow. So clearly there's a lot of reasons for those two to have a conversation with, but why did you pick those two?
Amelia Earhart was, she was a seriously independent woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think looking at her life, I think she'd made a much better man than woman because she was absolutely fearless.
Right.
Fearless.
Right.
And she wouldn't, she didn't take well to men supervising her because this was mm-hmm. back in the 30s.
Yeah.
And which was pretty revolutionary for a woman back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she was highly intelligent. She was extremely ambitious. And I think I would like to have as much courage to just fly out totally into the unknown like she did.
Right, right.
And say, I'm going to do this. And she just takes off and goes. And goes.
Yeah.
But
I got to throw this out, just to even think about it, is that, and I'm looking at some information now about her. It was 1937 that she disappeared, July 2nd, 1937. She was 40 years old.
Right.
And just to have a pilot's license or just to fly was a monumental achievement for a woman in those days, let alone everything else.
Oh, yeah. They gave out pilot's license to women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, much less my, I was just thinking of another analogy. I was thinking, well, maybe Ma Baker, back in the 30s, she was the head of this gangster group there. And society was not generous to women being anything other than just a stereotypical mother, wife,
right.
Housewife, just stay out of our way type thing. Because, we're men. And we got balls, and we got things to do.
Yeah.
And that was the world that she lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
and she said, guess what?
Yeah.
You're not the only one, buddy.
So this is from Wikipedia. It says, early influence. A spirit of adventure seemed to abide in the Earhart children, with the pair setting off daily to explore their neighborhood. As a child, Earhart spent long hours playing with Pidge, which I guess was her sister, climbing trees, hunting rats with a rifle, belly slamming her slide downhill. All the love of the outdoors and rough and tumble play was common to many youngsters. Some biographers have characterized the young Earharts as a tomboy.
I bet.
Yeah.
Amazing woman.
Yeah. pretty interesting. You know, the sad on this topic, and I'm going to get real deep on this, is when I it's almost every time I do this show, people come up with people, and obviously, if you haven't heard Amelia Earhart, then you've been in a cave. But we forget.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, we forget about these people. You start looking into their lives a little bit deeper. We forget about how much they did. I mean, she's famous basically for not that it was minor to fly across the Atlantic Ocean, but she did so much more. And of course, as a woman, and just did so much more. So,
yeah, she was just one of those pioneers that you really don't. I don't think they. History really gives us credence to as to how many doors this woman opened up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks
pioneer.
Like
she did this, and she's I'm going to do it.
Yeah. She was the first trans person. Looks like she 1928. She had a transatlantic flight.
There you go. I didn't want to come out and say trans, but you know, that's what I'm thinking.
That was horrible. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Winston Churchill, why did you choose him?
He is actually my great-great-uncle.
Oh, cool.
My mother's, my mother's mother was a Churchill.
Yeah. Wow,
and,
cool.
And he was, he was a terrible leader in his early years. He really was. And he didn't really come into his own until the World War II years, the late 20s, the 30s, and the 40s, when he could literally keep a nation, an entire nation, from going berserk, from losing, making them stay the course, that we can do that. One person, what a personality.
Yeah.
That you could do that and make them believe you. Make you believe that, yes, they can take it and they can bounce back, that no matter what, they were not going to get beaten.
Yeah.
A strong person.
Pretty. Yeah. Well, you know, like a lot of movies or whatever, you talk about these people that you can pick and choose across the history, our history in this world, and if you remove them from history, how much different things would be. And he was definitely that, one of those people, in a bad way, in
he
a
was.
Worse way. Yeah.
In a worse way. Yeah. And he was a functioning alcoholic. He loved his bourbon and his cigars.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was functioning.
He was.
Yeah. He functioned.
Yeah,
okay.
He was.
Yeah. Maybe that helped him. And who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. He had a little bit of that Irish blood in him there that kind of took him down.
All right.
You know,
so
I'll say this. Now, I'm going to say something totally different. I know you run out of time here, but I'm going to say something here because this is really bugged me. And it's a personal thing. It's just me.
Uh-huh.
Is that I grew up, I can't tell you, 90% of my adult life, that when I answered, they thought it was a woman.
Right.
And now, after I've transitioned and I've gotten older, the older I've got, the lower my voice keeps dropping. So now I get heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you that I think. And it has nothing to do with your voice, because I think that's your natural voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to say that, and you and I talked about this before, and you don't fit into this, and it's something that I wanted to not fit into, but kind of on that same kind of topic, is that a lot of times when people, and it seems to me that it's almost like you've transitioned and you no longer try as hard. And it's kind of like the thing, like when people get married, they kind of stop trying to, you know, they come to dinner in their old beat up sweatpants and stuff. Whereas when you were dating, they were dressed up or something, you know, that kind of thing. And again, it has nothing to do with
anything.
Yeah, has nothing to do with your voice because that's your natural voice. But I think a lot of times we, and it just kind of makes me think about it, is that I think that we, as we get older and as we transition, we kind of settle into where we are and we feel like very comfortable. And so anyway, it just kind of on that. But I don't know. It's kind of, that's kind of strange.
It is. May I say something about that? My sister, when I first started transitioning, you know, I was all about garters and stockings and skirts and high heels. And, you know, I wouldn't go anywhere unless I was, you know, dressed in lines and a skirt and heels. And my sister told me, she looked and she said, "You look very, very nice." She said, "You looked overdressed." She says, "But you look very, very nice." So she said, "But I'm going to tell you," she says, "eventually, that's going to stop." She says, "You are going to become more and more wearing regular clothes and not really feeling the need to dress up all the time." And, and that's when you become like a normal woman.
Yeah.
Woman. Because that's how we are. When we get older, we like to dress up and this and that, just, but not every day. Not every day. We just mostly like to be comfortable with our clothes and how we feel and who we are. And she said, and that's the best thing to be, is to be comfortable with yourself.
Yeah.
You don't feel that need to do that anymore. And she's right. She was right.
Well, you always look very nice. You always dress very nice.
So do you. And so do you, Holly. You know, you set the bar high. So.
Well, thank you.
And I can't say that for all the girls.
I was the same way. I mean, it was the short skirts and the thigh high and the high heels, and I would have been, you know, the high heels with you, you would have been 5'5", but with me, I was 8'4".
that was perfect.
Yeah. So, and we all go through that. And then the one for me, it was it would have eventually happened, but I call her my mentor. Is that there was a trans girl by the name of Chris back when I first started going out to clubs locally. I was going to places out before that. It was before I started hormones and before I was out at all and things like that. And she and I met as friends one night at the Connection, and that's one reason the Connection has some real strong sentimental value to me, because it was my first home. And we met pretty much every Wednesday, kind of getting to know each other. And she was in nice slacks, just a very comfortable top. She didn't have much makeup on, and flats. She's a tall girl. And I come in with my mini skirt, my thigh highs, my 4-inch heel, you know, I'm in full makeup. It's on a Wednesday night, and like I'm going to some nightclub on a Saturday night in New York City, basically. And so she was talking about, you know, kind of I think there's a difference between the word blending and the word passing, personally. And I think the blending is kind of dressing appropriately, basically, for your age.
There is a difference.
For your,
I agree.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so we talked about that, and I started wearing pants more often then, and which, of course, I wear pants like 98% of the time now. But I started wearing pants and started wearing clothes. Really, I just started trying to dress like a 50-year-old woman would a lot of times that, you know, on a Wednesday night or whatever. And it really, really helped me. Now, I always wore heels at that time, and but then gradually I think going to work every day changed that, just because my feet were killing me by the end of the day. But I think you're right. I think, you know, and that's the thing is if you would speak to this a little bit, is that and there's a, I don't know what this means to you, and that's pretty much what I'm going to ask is, another mentor of mine years ago made a comment that you have to learn, you have to become comfortable in your own skin. And I tell people a lot is that it's just a whole lot more than just wearing the clothes. And so if I say, and so if I say you got to be comfortable in your own skin, what would that mean to you and the for the trans people or the world, whatever?
I think it means being comfortable enough to stand up in front of people and talk about it.
Yeah, good point.
Not being overconfident, but being comfortably confident. You know, this is who I am. This is me. I'll ask if you have a question. I'll do my best to answer the question as honestly as I can. But yeah, I'm not hiding. I am not afraid. I'm not hiding. I'm not pretending. And I'm not lying about me. This is that. And
yeah.
I think that, and when you're that, when you are that, then you, the need to super impress, you know, to dress to the nines, you know, to be that flash girl, dissipates. You know, you don't really need that much, not much anymore.
No.
That kind of goes away. At least it did with me. And I was much more comfortable dressing appropriately, nicely, you know, nice. I like to dress nice, as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, it's appropriately for me. You know,
I'm
an old girl. And but I don't have to dress, you know, like I'm an apple.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Say, but, yeah.
Know. Yeah. Well, you have to be an old girl to know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's being comfortable with that, and that and that doesn't happen right away. That takes time. You really have to find you and like you, and to become comfortable with you, and then you, instead of being like that other person, you just become like another person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easier to blend when you don't feel odd, like the odd person out.
Right,
you know,
right.
You feel like you're just another person in there, and you're comfortable in a group of people, and you know, irregardless of what, with, you know, their genders.
Yeah.
You just, you're comfortable with any group simply because you're comfortable with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yourself.
Right, right.
I think that was a pretty roundabout way of going around that. Did I answer your question?
No, it did, yeah. If it is it's kind of the same way what we're talking about earlier is being comfortable in your own skin is similar, very close to related to being authentic and knowing yourself and that type of thing. So it's all kind of a circular.
And I'll say this about you. I hold you up pretty much on a high scale up there, not on a pedestal. You know, I held you in extremely high regard, because I think a lot of you, simply because you know, the journey you've gone through and the things you've done and the things that you continue to do, and you know, how you hold yourself, how you think of yourself, and you feel about yourself, and you come across as authentic. That was that
well,
perfect
thank you.
Word. And
yeah.
And you. And and that there aren't, I wish there were all the girls the community and guys were that way, but they're not.
Yeah,
they're not, and it's kind of, and it's hard to get there. And I think some of the, well, let me go a different direction with that conversation. There, it's a difficult journey to get there, and not everybody takes that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that. there's a lot of girls that, you know, don't take that journey that are angry that they they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just doesn't, you just don't get that. You know, you earn that.
Yeah.
You have to work for it hard. And you've done that. So anyhow.
Yeah. Well, appreciate that. I appreciate that. The I think it's a combination of the journey, no doubt. And I think the journey, I just don't, and you kind of hit on that. I just think, and I had someone ask me earlier about my recommendation on hormones, and you know how many times we get that question, is I want to get on hormones. Where do I start? And I always start with the therapist, because that's, I think, the best place to start. And that's the recommended by standards of care place to start, and that kind of stuff. But I think, and I will say that, you know, they imply and I understand they're in a hurry, and the journey is a long journey, and it helps if you go through it really go through this journey before us, that's plotted this path for us, that's helped. And it just makes a whole lot of sense. But it takes time to get to that point. And it's there was a time, like either one of us, there was a time if anybody knew, and people did, but people knew us 20 years ago, they would have said, well, what a messed up person that Holly is. I know that people probably did. But I think what happens is that I honestly think that the key to it is to really be honest with yourself, to be able to look at yourself and see your flaws, and see and be. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, had nothing to do with transgender stuff, and he said that people make mistakes. You need to give yourself permission to make mistakes, and I'm saying, you as trans people, we have to give ourselves permission not to be gorgeous, or not to be short, or not to be tall, or not to be this or that. We have to be give ourselves permission to be flawed, because human beings just are flawed. And I think when you, yeah, and I think when you just accept that, that I would like to be 30 pounds lighter, and I probably could maybe if I tried really, really hard. But I accept the fact that I like pizza ever so often. I like to eat a little bit ever so often, and I'm okay with that. And so I think when you accept that there's flaws and I've got these deficiencies and it just is what I am. I'm a rose with thorns.
Well, we all are.
Yeah.
We all are.
Right. Exactly.
And you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. We need to allow us be roses and have thorns.
Right.
And have those thorns.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say is that, I have had this conversation a number of times, is that, you know, the therapist, when they start to transition, is absolutely the first place to start, because it's in our head. It's in our head. It's in our souls. And the body is just a reflection of what's not right about us. But
exactly.
It's all inside our head and inside our souls. And an endocrinologist is not going to fix that. You know,
no.
A medical doctor is not going to fix that. They can, you know, that can help. But, you know, you've got to make that right in here. And then everything else just kind of falls into place.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Once you get the inside right, you know, the outside will, you know, it can kind of pretty much take care of itself. Hormones,
right.
Whatever, but my thinking is that I watch a lot of these young people and listen to their stories and how anxious they are. And you're right, it's all about now, and I just shake my head and I tell them, I just, no, you know,
yeah,
take is so important. You know, you have to get the inside of you right, you know, before you work on the outside.
Yeah,
they have to
exactly.
Match. And they will
if
you do it right. You know, they will match eventually.
Yeah.
You get it right, and then you'll be a happy girl or a happy guy.
And you'll be happy, because the goal is to come out happy at the end. The process of transitioning is this this amount of time and energy and financial situation. It's you're in quicksand all the time, or you're in this quagmire during that time. You're mentally, physically, emotionally going through all these really, really difficult situations. And on top of that, you probably got to have a job. You probably are in a relationship. You're probably dealing with other things, financial and social and mental and everything like that. But eventually you kind of come out at the other end of the tunnel and you want to function as a functioning member of society. And if you mess up all that other stuff in there, you come out a mess. And we've seen that.
Yes, we have. And that's a the saddest tragedy. To see someone who has gone through all that and then come out the other side, and they're a mess. They're a miserable mess.
Yeah.
And there's no joy there.
Yeah, exactly. So Tammy just asked a question on the chat. She said, do you and Tess think, Tammy, by the way, is Tammy Bickle, your friend on the panel that you and she was, So, and she said hi.
Hey, Tammy.
So she's a sweetie, and we get together. It's been a while since she and I got together lately. We need to get the three of us together, and Connie, her partner, I know she's going through some health things. So, but anyway, she asked a question. Do you and Tess think that the struggle may be a bit easier today than, say, 20 years ago? And I think the first thing is she's implying that we are that old that 20 years ago. I'm just kidding. But I'm going to comment on it, and I'll let you comment on and stuff. And I say there's no doubt the struggle is easier. But I'm going to say that, let's see if I can say this right. What concerns me, what worries me a little bit is because it is more than the name change, it's more than the body change, it's more than coming out. All these are important. They're very, very important. The issue is learning about yourself and becoming that true, authentic self. I think sometimes if it's easy to transition and easy to all that other, the peripheral stuff, and not, it needs to be easier. I mean, it needs to be easier. It was 20 years ago, and it is easier. But it concerns me is that if you aren't put in a situation where you have to do some self-examination a little bit more, then you may come out of the other side of the tunnel not prepared. That's my thought. What do you think?
I don't know if it's any easier. I think this transition business is hard.
Yeah.
It is a hard, hard thing. It's hard for young people. It's hard for old people. It's hard for anybody that's in between young and old. But I think it's become, less costly, you know, financially and socially. I think it's become less costly, less dangerous, as society, you know, seems to be moving towards, you know, a more inclusive, this as far as trans people. Than you and I, you know, experienced years and years ago. So I would say that part is better. But this is a hard thing. It doesn't matter how many people say, "Oh yeah, this is fine. You can do that." And then and there you are trying to get your mind around who you are, and then sort all that maleness that's been drilled into you, or that's been pushed upon you, or that your parents or whoever, and then, you know, find out, you know, find that part of you, you know, that the true self, that authentic self. That's hard. That takes a lot of time. It's a lot of work. That's a hard thing to do. And you really need to get to know you much better than most other people do.
Exactly. Well, we're going to finish up here a little bit. A couple of things I wanted to make sure people are aware is that Tess is her title for Trans Women National is CEO. She's a chief executive officer, and she is one of the officers with Rachel Leiter, Julie Millwood, and myself, and the four of us are the four main people in our organization. We have some other leaders involved, but we're the C-level and stuff at the top there. And she also volunteers at the Metropolitan Community Church, by which is here in Louisville, and I'm going to put a plug in there, the Metropolitan Community Church. By the way, Tammy said, hope to see you soon. And
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, the church is here in Louisville. It's an extremely very trans-friendly church. In fact, you know, Tess is volunteers there, attends there. We've got quite a few of our members of our organization that attend there. And just a really nice place. I'm looking up the address here right now, so I'm hesitating here a little bit. But it's at 5001 Crown Manor Place, Suite 206, 5001 Crown Manor Place. And
which runs off of Hikes Lane.
Yeah, it's over Hikes Lane, back behind that tumbleweed there if you're from the area and stuff. And Colleen is the pastor there, and she's incredible. She's a sweetheart and just a very godly person and just a very, very special person. And I say a lot of times and in fact, Tess, I do want to get you back on, and maybe it would be a really good topic for the four of us possibly one time is get on here and talk about the religious aspects of being transgender
and
would be a really good topic. And Colleen has been a blessing for our community to help us with that direction and everything. So anyway, she's a volunteer. Tess volunteers there at the Metropolitan Community Church, and is a great place to attend. So I put a plug in there. If you need information on Trans Women National, you need information on Metropolitan Community Church, on CHILL, any of those things, any of those places, then just if you want to contact Tess, you can go to the website and send us information. If you go to the website, I've changed, or the page has changed a little bit. It's over to the right. It is a page called Connect With Us, and you can connect through us through email. You can call us. You can join our newsletter. You can get on our Twitter page. You can actually send us mail, or you can send us a message right there on the page, and you can address it as a subject you want to talk to Tess. You want to find out information about anything that is that would be great. Love to hear from you. So Tess, any last words or anything? Any really good Tesserita wisdom?
I wish I was that smart. I really do. But I will say this. Time spent talking with Holly Knight is the best part of your day.
Well, thank you.
So I'll put that plug in for Miss Knight.
And you have said something, we're going to close with this. You've made a comment one time and about transitioning, and I think it's something about I think you called it the battle or the war in your mind or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Why don't you finish with that, and we'll finish up the show.
Part about transitioning for me was that war in my head was finally over. There was peace in my mind. And for the first time in my life, there was just one of me. So for me, that was the important part of transitioning. Not much more than the body and this and that. The war in my head between the man and the woman who I needed to be, who I wanted to be, and who people expected me to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was over.
Mm. Yeah. You're a special friend, a special person. The community of Louisville, the trans community, trans women national community, is lucky to have you here. I care about you deeply, and you know, just don't ever ask me to drink a Tesserita.
I love you, baby.
Love you, and thank you. And we're going to close up here, and we'll probably bring Tesserita back here, and we're going to talk about religion and church and God's view of things, you know, the different people that try to condemn us and that kind of stuff, and how we fight through that. So anyway, that
wire.
Yeah, it should. Yeah. So I thank everybody for being here. We have starting next week, or coming at next week, we have Journeys with Julie, and she's on the first and the third Monday of each month. And then I'm on the second and the fourth Monday at 8 o'clock. So give us a ring, give us an email, contact us, let us know what your thoughts are, and love to hear from you. We'll talk to you soon.
That you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you the rainbow, birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I? Bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow. Why?